You're listening to Track Talk with CH and Ferdy.
Check, 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 check. Microphone check, 1, 2, what is this? It's Track Talk with CH and Ferdy, episode 4. Man, we got a month in. That's what I'm talking about. Shout out to my man Ferd over here. What's going on, Ferd?
Chilling.
Told ya, man of many words. We got a special guest today.
Today's a lot younger in here, didn't it?
Yeah, got real younger. You know, all the Ben Gay and Icy Hot. This person does not need that. But today's episode is going to be focusing on new coaches and what new coaches can expect. So we have in the building, in the studio, in the stew, a new coach. Her name is, introduce yourself.
Hey there, I'm Paige Ware. One of the new assistant coaches for Hilton track team.
All right. And for those who don't know, Hilton is a high school in the Northeast region in upstate New York area. And Paige, we are a nice podcast where we are good Christian. Let me stop lying. We floss your stats. Let them know who you are, what you've done, high school, college. Throw your stats out there.
So
we floss on here.
In high school, I was primarily a long and triple jumper. Short sprinter as well. Went to states a few times, won sectionals a few times. And then after high school, I went to college, Division I track and field athlete, mainly long and triple jump there as well.
That's what I'm talking about. Throw that Division I out there. He's just stunting on us real quick.
Better than me.
I went Division I, but they like I walked on, so it was different. Like I just showed up.
I went Division III for one track meet.
At least you had a track meet then.
Yeah, then I left. Yeah. I didn't like the coaching.
I didn't like that. I had to do so much, and I wasn't on scholarship, but I was getting treated like I was on scholarship. So I was like that scholarship athlete without all the scholarship perks. But it's all good.
Yeah.
You know, we're not bitter here. But yeah, so this episode, we're going to talk about new coaches, what new coaches can expect. Advice, you know, we can give to new coaches. What you can expect at practices, meets, throughout the season, you know. If you're a new coach that's an assistant coach versus a new coach that's a head coach, you know. If you're a new young coach versus a new older coach. There's a lot of different, you know, scenarios that new coaches can go through. So, but I think we'll just start. I'll just ask the question about Paige. What made you want to get into coaching, being a former athlete?
Who forced you?
Brian Harris forced me into this.
My government out. You know what I'm saying? I'm supposed to be Coach Harris, but yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Coach Harris.
It's all good. It's all gravy. It's all gravy.
Well, really, it was because you asked me if I wanted to coach, and I wasn't doing anything else at the time. But I don't know. I love track and field, so mm-hmm. being able to contribute to that to help younger athletes, I think is really what drew me to it.
Okay, see that, y'all? She's doing it for the love, not the fact that I cornered her at a baby shower and said, hey, you want to coach? I need you to coach. Shout out to Bree Eason.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, yeah, that's pretty much what happened. We needed a jumps coach because going back to what we talked about in the past, when you have a track team and you have a large team, you might be able to do every event. You might know what you're talking about as far as training for every event with your athletes, jumps, hurdles, sprints. But if you got like 50 kids that are all doing sprints, jumps, hurdles, one person, it can get kind of tedious. So just to make things easier, we were like, hey, it'd be really nice if we had a jumps coach that can focus on the jumpers and give the jumpers the attention they need so that, you know, we don't have coaches spreading themselves too thin where, you know, okay, the jumpers are getting all the attention this week. Hurdlers and sprinters are just left in limbo. Then the sprinters get the attention this week, and they're left in limbo, and so on and so forth. So that was one of the reasons that we wanted to reach out to her, especially being a former long and triple jumper herself. We felt she'd be able to relate to some of the athletes. That being said, now that you have an indoor season under your belt, being a former long jumper, triple jumper, how do you think that helped you in regards to being a long jump, triple jump coach?
I think it helped me because I was able to relate to the athletes more, specifically the jumpers.
Mm-hmm.
I went through a lot of the same things that they're going through now when they were in high school. One of the things I noticed is like they hate lifting, which I did as well. I mean, I can't remember picking up a weight when I was in high school, but like I get the benefits of it now. So if I had somebody there to tell me the benefits of lifting when I was in high school, maybe I would have done it. So having that outside perspective, looking back, I think has helped me a lot coaching the athletes now.
Okay. Anything you want to add, Bert?
No, I was going to say, did they force you to lift in college?
Yeah, they forced me to lift in college. So.
Sure. No, I'm not going to add anything else to that.
Why don't
we talk about when we were new coaches?
Yeah.
I went to my old high school pretty much because I had nothing to do. I think I was unemployed at that point. And I went just to visit the team, and I saw a couple people doing hurdles. And mind you, that team only had two coaches.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know, nobody was really watching them. And I had done the hurdles before. And, I mean, I had an idea. I promise you I was not a good coach back then, but I think at that time you fake it till you make it, and just kind of, you know, somebody working with an athlete, they don't need to know that you don't know necessarily. Of course, I knew some drills. I knew some workouts. I didn't know necessarily the reasoning behind everything, but I did give them a reason if we did something. Even back then, I didn't know anything about lifting.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning the benefits. We did do some lifting in the weight room. I promise we never did an Olympic lift. We never did a power clean. You know, it was basically deadlift, squats, and bench or something like that. But, as a new coach, you kind of come in a little clueless. I mean, you think you know, and then you realize there's a lot that you don't, and you have to learn, in a sense. But even as a new coach, I was still able to help a number of the hurdlers get personal bests and move on to bigger and better things after that.
All right. And when I started coaching, I actually came in as an assistant coach. And I was there for two indoor and outdoor seasons, two years total. So I started in the outdoor season. So I did full outdoor, indoor, outdoor, then indoor. Then an opportunity came up to be a head coach, and I felt like I was actually in a good situation as an assistant coach. The team I was on was loaded. They were winning championship after championship after championship. And I think at the point that I had left, they had won 12 straight Section 5 championships.
They're all right.
Yeah, they were all right. You know, we're okay. You know, so I was able to take that type of winning mentality onto the program that I went to, and the program that I went to, we had gone against them in an outdoor meet the year before. So I kind of remember, like, oh, we almost lost to them. They had some deep talent. So me going there, they knew the program I was coming from. Said, oh, he's coming from Edison, so we gonna be good now. So it was kind of like, okay, I gotta live up to the hype that I'm coming from Edison. Edison's been winning all these championships. We gotta represent. But at the same time, it allowed me to automatically have the respect of the athletes because they knew where I came from. So I knew, okay, I can't mess this up. I got to show and prove. And I think it also motivated me to make sure that I knew exactly what I was doing, what I was talking about, because like Ferdy said, sometimes you come in clueless. I had a background in a championship program watching how to organize a practice, how to do the administrative work, you know, putting together the lineups. Why are we putting together the lineup this way? Why are we putting athletes in these events? And all that, you know, that was part of the learning curve itself. But at the same time, I didn't come in perfect. You know, I was like most coaches who come in with their first program and aren't 100% sure. What do? You go to somebody who's proven. I had the Baylor track and field workouts in my back pocket, and I'm like, okay, these are college workouts, but how can I kind of dumb this down to be a high school workout and make it work for my athletes? You know, looking back on it, you know, we had a lot of success early on and throughout my entire time being there. But at the same time, I knew, okay, I can't just use the same blueprint formula that somebody else has created the whole time. I need to actually do some studying and go in and look on my own to see what can I do to, you know, make our team better. What if this stops working? What if it's too much for an athlete? You know, what if it's not enough for an athlete? What can I do? And that's when I started getting into the learning side of it. And then, you know, Ferdy can tell you, we talk probably, what, 3 to 4 times a week at minimum about track stuff.
Yeah, we just went a good hour and a half before this recording, just going through some stuff.
And my athletes will tell you, I'll probably change my warm-up, you know, once a year, just because I'll see things that it might be redundant. We're doing this somewhere else in practice. We don't need to do it in the warm-up. I might add something because I feel like, okay, I found out this is something that we need to be doing that's missing. So coming in as a new coach, I was able to take what I learned from the program I was at that was very successful at Edison, go to the School of the Arts in Rochester, New York, and bring that winning mentality, but then also put my own little stamp on it. It was like, okay, I got, you know, all this street cred from being at Edison, but I need to, you know, make my own mark. So that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to take too much of what I learned at Edison and just, you know, make it a carbon copy. I wanted to take what I learned from Edison, the good stuff, but then also put my own fingerprint on it so that we could, you know, be our own program and not like in the shadows of, oh, well, they're only good because they have the coach from Edison and blah, 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 and this and the third. So I wanted to put my own stamp on it. Plus, I wanted to learn more, you know, because when you're a head coach, you're in charge of everything. You're responsible for everything. So now I not only do I have to work with the jumpers, I have to work with the hurdlers, I have to work with the sprinters, I have to work with the distance runners, I have to work with the throwers. So it forced me to learn a lot, but then at the same time, it also forced me to be a lot more organized. So when I came over to Hilton, even though I only had to work with one group, I had been so organized and anal about my workouts then that it made it a lot easier coming over to Hilton to do it. So that was my experience coming in as coaching. I kind of had a cheat code. So so it was kind of laid out for me.
Yeah, I didn't have one.
Sorry,
I figured it out.
Yeah.
I said I didn't have a blueprint. I didn't have an outline. I just figured it out as we went.
Yeah, I mean, I had a cheat code, but at the same time, I still had to figure it out because when you're using somebody else's blueprint, it's just like when you're working for somebody else's company. That's their vision. That's, you know, what their love is, and they know why they did that, but you're just following along with what they did because, oh, yeah, well, they loved it. It worked for them, but what's going to work for you? What's going to be your vision? You know, why are you doing what you do? And that's what I wanted to learn, you know, as I moved along. And going along with that, we probably should just jump into, like, certifications and talk about that since I kind of tap danced around it.
Yeah, okay. Because
talk your junk. Floss.
The USTF CCCA Sprints Hurdles Relays Specialist Certification. I've also done the USTF CCCA Strength and Conditioning Specialist Certification. I've also done USATF Level 2 Sprints Hurdles and Relays Certification. Those were very helpful to me to be able to plan out workouts, mm-hmm. or at least get a good idea of how to plan out workouts, why I'm doing what I'm doing, setting up a day versus setting up a Monday versus a Tuesday versus a Wednesday, setting up how week one looks with relation to how week 12 looks. So basically, I did those certifications. They're pretty expensive.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's why I'm level one still.
They they pretty much each require a week. Scratch that. The level two USATF level two and this the Sprints Hurdles Relays Specialist from UST. I hate saying that acronym. It's way too long. USTF CCCA. Those are a week long. Basically, what you go through with each of those is you get a background in the physiology of how the body, pretty much exercise physiology, more related to the sport. You also get the biomechanics, so the movement related to, you know, the sport itself. So depending on sprinting, hurdling, jumping, distance running, whatnot. You also look at motor learning and a bit of psychology. And then you go into your event-specific information. So you go into the sprints and hurdles, and then you talk about relays. And in each of them, you also have an activity, a group activity, where you guys plan out I think it's a week in a certain. So there's a scenario. Say you got a college male 400 meter hurdler. He's in his third year. The season before he had an injury, so on and so forth. You plan out pretty much a workout for him, and then you have to explain why you chose those different exercises or whatever. I found the USTF CCCA level or the sprints, hurdles, relays a lot more helpful. Because along with that, throughout the week, like as I was talking about those scenarios we did with a group, you also get scenarios throughout the week and you kind of do a little homework. All right, you just have to plan out one day. But in that one day, you have to kind of explain what you did or why you set it up that way. At the same time, as I said, you also do the group presentation in front of the instructors. And with that one, you also have to do, I guess you could call it a take-home exam. So after the week, there's an exam per each chapter that you were given. So there's a little exam on physiology. There's one on biomechanics, motor learning, the biomechanics of sprinting, hurdling, and some other. I don't remember. It was about three, four years ago. And then you also, along with that, you have to do your own annual program in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, you have a scenario, whatever that may be, a girl 200 meter runner or whatever. And then you have to figure out what you're going to do in like the general preparation period, specific preparation, pre-comp, comp, depending on how long the season is, if they're coming out of basketball, whatever. Like, there's just a number of scenarios you have to figure out, and then you do that. So I like that a lot better than the USATF. I don't know if it's changed since then, but, I mean, I think you get the idea of the idea behind everything is just to help you get even more prepared or just probably figure out new things that you can do within your program to help out your athletes. And I just happened to take it a step further and decided to go for a master's in kinesiology. But you don't need to do that.
Flossing that science on us.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. I know people are probably sitting there like, oh, UST, FBI, CC, Crip Walk. What?
United States Track and Field Cross Country Coaches Association, and then USATF is USA Track and Field.
There you go. But basically, that he is what I would call one of the upper-level certification specialists, so to speak, in track and field. The sad irony to become a coach at the high school level, if you're a teacher and you're a new – especially in New York State. If you're a New York State certified teacher, all you need to do is say, hey, I want to coach. There's an opening available. I'll apply. That's it. If you're a teacher, you're automatically certified because you've already gone through what they feel is necessary to become a track coach or a coach in any sport for that matter. If you are not a certified teacher, what you'll basically need, I'm going based on the state of New York, you'll need to be fingerprinted. You'll need to take a 3-part coaching course. I took mine through Monroe to BOCES. It was just three courses I had to take. It was like 10 weeks for each class. It was one day a week, no test. The way it worked out, as long as you were enrolled in one of the courses, you were able to start coaching. So you had to eventually finish all three, but as long as you were enrolled in one, you could start coaching. But you had to eventually take all three of those courses, get your fingerprint with the state of New York. You had to have DASA training, which is Dignity for All Schools Act training. You used to have to do the school bullying and child violence, I think it is, but they kind of all lumped that into DASA, so they made it one. I don't know how you say it. Just basically this one course replaces those two courses instead of that. You have to have your CPR, first aid, AED certification. And if I'm not mistaken, that is about it to become a coach of any sport in New York State. That being said, you know, if you want to become a coach to the next level, you have the option of doing the USATF level 1, level 2, level 3, the USTF CCCA they don't really have level one and level two. They have.
So they have kind of the first one's a general, the next one you can get, and you can actually skip to the specialist one,
mm-hmm.
and then they have master endorsements courses as well, where in those you can take a course. You don't necessarily have to. Basically, the master endorsements is you take a course, and then afterwards you get a year mentorship with someone,
mm-hmm.
so you can email freely, talk on the phone freely, if you want.
Okay.
And then with a higher level coach, I took the hurdles one, but I wasn't. Well, I'm not coaching at the now, anyways. But I wasn't coaching at the time. I think that was
coach like substance.
Yeah, whatever. And so I didn't do necessarily the mentorship part.
Okay.
But. You know, I took the course just for more information.
All right.
Oh, I was in school. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah.
Duh. That's why I wasn't coaching.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have my USATF level one. Level two is a little too expensive for our brother. And I took the general USTF CCCA training course. And basically, both of those, what they did, they gave you an overview of training methods for each event. So. You weren't really becoming an event specialist, but you would learn about every single event. You know, what are different things that you can do to train athletes in those events. So it was basically a general overview.
Like USATF. Dang-gone race walk.
Yeah. However, like I said, if you want to get to the Olympics, race walk officials are needed. Free trips.
Or they should just get rid of the event.
Yeah, but if you want to go to the Olympics... Race walk official, just throwing it out there. But yeah,
it's not needed. You're just walking.
Your
just
US
jog. Sorry,
somebody got a medal for it in the Olympics, though, man. Somebody, even a guy. But anyway, my USATF level one and my USTF CCCA general certifications. What they did for me, they kind of just assured me that I was going along the right direction. You know that I was. What I was doing with my training methods and practice, you know, the type of workouts I was creating, when I was having certain workouts on certain days, when we do weight room, why we do weight room, it just showed me that I was, A, on the right direction, on the right path. I wasn't screwing anything up. But, B, at the same time, I need to delve in a little bit more and research a little bit more to find out specifically, you know, what I want to do to just take my training methods to the next level. And that's when I actually... started with Ferdy, we started going into the complete track and field training program. So, and those are for the person that may not be able to have the time to take a week-long vacation to go, I don't know, California, the Midwest, Florida, wherever they have them, because they never seem to have them in your area at the time. But you can buy an online program in a specific event, and you can learn at your own pace. You can download the videos, watch the videos. Sometimes they'll come with extra materials that can help you do your outlines and things of that nature. So for the person that's, you know, the self-starter, wants to, you know, learn at their own pace and on their own, it's a good thing because you can also refer back to it as well. So I think that's something that's been definitely beneficial and helpful, especially when you have coaches like the great Boo who are putting out training programs. And hey, if you want to learn from the best, right?
Yeah. So actually, I just wanted to go back real quick to the money part of it.
Yeah.
I was just pulling up information for like USATF level two. So in 2018, this one's going to be in Indianapolis. And the prices, if you're a first timer, the tuition only is $465. They also have some room and board options. If you're looking at a double room, it'll be $840 for the week and $1,015 for a single room. So that's basically that. The other one, the USTF CCCA specialist, that one is something like $450 for the week plus another $400 for room and board. Paige, are you interested in any of that?
Yes, I'm interested.
Except for the price?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Light money, light work, light work.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. Plus, you have to find your way there, so you might have to take a flight, rent a car if you want, or rent a car to get there. Well, if you do the room and board, then food's provided. But if you don't, then when I did one in, was in Villanova. I don't remember which one that was, but I stayed at a friend's place.
Okay.
So I didn't pay for that, but I had to pay for my food. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah. When I did the USATF level, when I also did it at Villanova, I used my Choice Hotels discount, hooked up that hotel, and I just drove there every day because I figured that'd be cheaper than the actual room and board part. And I would just say to anybody who's interested, and we'll post the link in description as far as how you can access the USTF, CCCA, and USATF training courses for the different levels of training. I'm speaking on USATF. They put out their calendar pretty much in advance, so you can look through almost an entire year and see, okay, this one's going to be in New York City, this one's going to be in Chicago, this one's going to be in Philadelphia, this one's going to be in California, and kind of just pick and choose, like, okay, I know I have free time this week, this one's going to be in an area that's close to me, and that's pretty much what I did. I just sat and waited until it was close. They had it in Villanova, which is about 3 to 4 hours away, weekend trip, and I plan like that. If you're going to do a level two, if you're not in the Midwest or the West Coast or in the Florida area where they tend to have them on a regular basis, just try and plan that time. Okay, I know this year I want to do my level two. I need to save up. I need to plan my vacation time for this time because it's going to be about at least 4 days to a week. And just, you know, just plan your time accordingly. But I think if you're in it for the long haul, it is definitely beneficial to try and get as much of the knowledge you can get from other people as you can, because in track and field as a coach, I feel like stealing is key. If you're not stealing from somebody else, then why are you here? For real.
Yeah, and Paige, there's a level one June 29th through July 1st at Ithaca. If
you're interested.
Okay. If you're interested.
Yeah. Level one is not that expensive, and it's definitely well worth it. It gives you, like I said, it gives you a broad perspective on training. And there are also the event-specific training materials available at Complete Track and Field that we peruse on a regular basis. So that is also an option.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could just ask us for that.
Yeah, we got the hookup.
Just FYI, it's $205 for the level one.
That's doable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you stay there for the weekend.
Yep.
It's long, though. So I swear, it isn't like 14 hours of just sitting down and listening to them talk.
And like there is a test afterwards.
Oh, the test takes forever.
Yeah.
It's
an online test, though. So you have a certain amount of time to take the test, and you can go back. You can start it, go back, and, you know, do a section here, a section there, okay, until you complete it. What is it? Like, you get, like, what, 30 days to complete it?
No, I thought you get 6 months. Well, okay. I think when I did it, I got 6 months or 3 months, something like that.
I think I did mine in like 2014, so I don't even remember.
How long is the test?
It's either like anywhere. I don't remember if it's 100 questions or 200 questions.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah, something. It's definitely 100. It might be two, but I think it was closer to 100 questions.
Whatever. We could cheat. We'll give you the answer. It's like, what? Race walk?
Nothing.
It's nothing. Just walk.
There you go.
There's your training.
Cause
we'll walk a mile, we'll walk two, and we'll walk three, and then until we get to 20K.
98% of them are cheating anyway. True. Not doing it right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're running.
Yeah.
They're running stupidly. Anyways, what's the next on the on agenda before I keep going?
We can go back up to the top and talk about, you know, what to expect at practices.
For a
and
new
meets.
Coach.
Yeah, for a new coach.
Paige, what did you find out at practice that was different from the coach's side than you what I found as an athlete?
I was actually surprised that everybody was so friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're used, you have your coaches that you've known for a couple of years, and obviously your teammates that you've been with for a while, and then someone new comes in. I know personally sometimes I'm a little standoffish, so I was just surprised at how friendly and welcoming everybody was and how open they were to the stuff that I had them doing, and I didn't really get backlash or anybody saying that they didn't want to do it or they didn't agree with what I was having them
do. It's because you're young.
Yeah.
That's true, but I feel like sometimes
popular.
That could be a disadvantage. Like, the youngest people there, I'm only 10 years older than them, so.
Nah, you're like 12 years older than
them. Okay,
don't make
years.
Yourself feel good.
But I was trying. But I don't know. I guess it is an advantage and a disadvantage being young, because sometimes they see me as their friend and sometimes they don't.
They try and talk to you a lot longer than they actually working out and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, exactly. They try to just get me off task and want to have friendly conversations when I need them to actually do a workout.
Okay. How do you feel that your youth is an advantage or a disadvantage when it comes to, say, for example, demonstrating a technique?
It's definitely an advantage to be younger because I can demonstrate.
Ha, 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 ha. It's not funny. Hey, watch it.
Yeah. I wanted to say it, though, because I tell my athletes, look, you get one demo per 7 days. That's it. If you get a demo on Thursday, you're not getting another one until at least next Thursday.
Yeah, because I'm young and I could do it. I could do
but
everything still.
I will say, maybe it's just the gym floor. I did do a demonstration, and then the next day my shins were kind of hurting. So
getting up close to 30. It's coming.
Overall, though, it's an advantage for sure.
I think we okay. scared her.
Yeah. All right. Another question I wanted to ask. Okay. How was your experience at your first meet as a coach versus being an athlete?
It was different because I didn't expect to feel like I wanted to get out there and jump, mm-hmm. but I did.
Okay.
And it was also different because I had a lot of coaches looking at me like she's definitely a student. She's not a coach.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's about it. There wasn't anything too drastic or crazy about it.
So okay. the part where, I don't know if you had this, maybe not even your first meet, but were you looking for an athlete because they got to sign in or check in and they're not around?
Ah, yes.
That part, you got to worry about that. As an athlete, you just, you know what you're doing. So yeah. you go, you check in, you get your mark, and then the kids aren't around for their marks.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I'm long jumping. I had to go get my mark, but now I'm responsible for 9 long jumpers yes. that need 9
yeah.
marks.
Yeah. And I kind of expected, like when I was jumping, like you guys said, I just got my stuff done. I knew what I had to do. But mm-hmm. sometimes there's some athletes that need you to hold their hand and need you to remind them to check in and need you to remind them to warm up and you need to remind them to get their marks. And that was one thing that I wasn't used to.
Okay.
You shouldn't be. You should never be used to it.
I want to go back to something you said earlier in regards to how you were surprised at how friendly everybody was. And I just wanted to, follow up with that. I remember when I first went to school of the arts, I mentioned earlier that since I came from a winning program at Edison Tech, I instantly had the respect because, oh, he came from Edison. We're going to be good because he's going to put us in a position to win. But I do know there's a slight difference when I came to Hilton because when I was coming to Hilton, I was replacing somebody else.
Yeah, you were.
And when you're in a situation where you're replacing another coach, sometimes it's like, oh, my God, we got a new coach to replace the person we don't like. Yes. And then sometimes it's like.
Whoa.
No,
what?
I'm not talking about you,
oh,
man.
Okay.
I'm talking general right now. But the other side is sometimes it's like, man, who is this new dude, man? We had this coach last year that had us right. And I don't even know you, bro. Where you came from, do you know how to – can you even jump, bro? So I think that's one of the things that you have to look forward to as a new coach. If you're coming into a program where there was an established coach that was there for a while, did the athletes, respond to them well? Did they not? And you're coming in filling that person's shoes, do you have to just deal with that? Oh, my God, yes, we're glad you're here because now we have somebody different. Or, man, look, man, we missed the other coach, and I don't know why you even here, bro. I'll work out on my own, So those are some of the different dynamics. Did you have to experience any of that, Ferdy?
No, I was just good. Actually, here's some advice for new coaches. If you're fat, you should probably lose some weight unless you're like a thrower's coach because no one's going to take you seriously. Well, I wouldn't. Let's say I'm a distance runner and you're fat. Like, no, you're not coaching me. Like, get out of here.
But are there really distance coaches that are overweight?
No.
Okay.
It shouldn't be.
No, but I've seen some sprint coaches that are super fat.
True.
Like, yeah. Overly gigantic. Like, maybe, in the city school. District in Rochester.
Shots fired.
Probably other ones as well. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to say the actual school's name, but yeah. It's one of the suburb ones.
No shots.
Yeah, okay.
maybe shots fired. We wouldn't know. Who knows?
No, but no, don't be fat and tell people what to do. You're not a good leader if you're fat. Go ahead.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, because sometimes you get in a situation, you might have that overweight coach that happens to be a sprint coach, but they used to be a top-notch sprinter.
I don't care.
I want y'all to share y'all thoughts on the ideology that just because you might have been a good athlete means you're going to be a good coach.
Oh, gosh, I'll go into this. No, and I've seen it often.
Yeah.
I don't want to say names or schools.
We can edit it out.
Nah, no editing. Golly, a lot of people, and I've seen this with a number of athletes, where they want to come into coaching, and then they end up being like dictators.
Yeah.
They know everything, especially if they ran at a good college.
Mm-hmm.
They'll take those workouts and think that's what they need to implement at the high school level, and they just overwork the athletes, and I saw it a lot.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I took advantage. No, I just wanted it to be that awkward silence right there.
Yeah.
I did it on purpose.
Okay.
oh, my gosh.
No, I took advantage of it and just really showed why I was a better coach through the athletes. I let the athletes kind of do the talking. And while I was kind of beating their kids, in a sense. So.
And not only that, too, at the end of the day, we have to realize that no matter how good, bad, in between an athlete is, if they're 15, they're still 15. Science is, still in effect. Growth and development is still in effect. So there's only so much. I don't care if they have damn near Olympic times. They're still developing at a 15, 16, 14, 12-year-old rate. So you need to treat the workouts as such. So just because you have a stud athlete, let's give them college workouts, they're going to break down just like anybody else because they're probably still eating the same garbage that all the other kids are eating that we ate when we were kids. So you have to think about that.
Some Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Oh, my God. I remember the day before a track meet when we were getting ready to run. We were running at Cortland. It was an invitational, overnight invitational. So, we're hype. We're high school kids. We got an overnight invitational. We're staying at a hotel. And then one of my teammates' moms brought us some Egg McMuffins from McDonald's. Oh, we get McDonald's for breakfast. It's about to turn up today. Man, I ran so greasy that next that day. It was crazy. You could feel, the grease moving inside you. I didn't run well that day. But, yeah. So, I don't know where I was going with that. But it happened.
Nah, I was just talking about Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I don't know where McDonald's came in. Whatever.
Yeah, it happens.
Paige, do you any of your friends from high school coaching?
Or former competitors?
Not from high school, no, but from college. One specifically is a college coach, actually.
Okay.
Which was surprising to me. I mean, not saying that he wouldn't be a good coach, but kind of the flip. He was like an okay athlete, but I think he is such a motivational person, mm-hmm. and he went to school for teaching. I think that makes him like such a great coach now.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to be a good athlete to be a good coach.
Yeah, for sure.
And
you can look to the NFL and the NBA for that.
Yeah,
it's kind of those are almost the best coaches are the ones that weren't the best necessarily athletes.
Because
sometimes the athletes just do what they're told while the athletes who become coaches try to understand why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the difference there.
I also think not being an elite athlete, you know that you have to work harder to try and compete with those elite athletes, and that work ethic sometimes translates over to your coaching method. You need to work harder to beat those elite programs, so you're going to be doing a lot of the research and trying to find the different things that are going to help you, with your workout plans, your annual plans, your outlines for the week, and things of that nature. So,
yeah. I don't know what else to add to that.
Well, we could talk about dealing with parents. Have you had to deal with any parents this season, Paige?
I have not.
Cool,
thankfully.
Irate.
I don't know. I haven't, thankfully, because
you know it's far and few in between that you actually deal with parents in a bad way, in a negative way.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, I'll say in track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, because everyone's running, in a sense, or everyone's participating, sort of. I think. God, even relays. I don't think there's really an issue. I mean, I think you can see what the performance is throughout the season. If your child isn't making it, then, well, you can see why. Yeah, I've never had an issue. I don't even think I would care about a parent having an issue.
I've had minor run-ins with parents, and that's only when the parent tends to think the athlete is a little bit better or more of a hard worker than the athlete really is. Because we have to remember, sure, you see your kids every day at home, but we see your kids every day in practice and what they're actually doing in practice and the effort that they're putting forth in practice. I will say, though, however, I did coach football for 2 years, and I've been to some of the soccer games that happen after our track practices, and I will say it is a lot different. Basketball, it's a lot different when it comes to parents who have athletes who are in team sports where there's starters and bench players. Luckily, in track, we don't have to worry about that, like Ferdy spoke about earlier. There are no starters. There are no bench athletes.
There are starters, in a sense.
But
everyone's
going to
participate.
Yeah, everybody gets to run. You might not run in the varsity heat because your time doesn't dictate that. But when a parent has a question about that, we can just say, if you look at the leaderboard, their time doesn't dictate. They're number 6 in the team in the 100, so they're not going to be in the top 4 for the 100 at a meet. You know, the only time there could be any type of, like, issue or gripe or whatever could be relays, and that's so few and far between that it doesn't even really matter, especially when you're at league meets and you can run 3 relays. Hey, everybody got a chance to run. Might not be on the top relay, but you can also use those same reasons as far as times and things of that nature as to why somebody may not be on that A relay or that number 1 relay. So that's a good thing. I haven't really had any issues with dealing with parents in a negative way. Not too much.
Not yet.
Not yet. I mean, knock on wood, you know, never say never. Just overall, though, I would say after you've had this whole season, you know, if you just look back on your whole first season as a head coach, if you was
assistant
coach, is that, well, head jumps coach, let me say that.
Okay.
What are some things that you could say to up and coming new coaches, potential new coaches, that, hey, you know, this is something that I did that worked for me, or this is something you might want to look out for? What's some advice that you can give to new coaches now that you have a season under your belt?
Some advice I think would be, which should be pretty obvious, but like, get to know your athletes. It's great to show up and give them stuff to do and help them become a better athlete physically, but also kind of like you were saying, they're high school kids, so at some point they're going to be a little fragile. So just getting to know them, building those relationships with them,
mm-hmm.
So they know that they can come to you, especially as a female. In high school, I didn't really have a female coach that I could talk to just about random stuff outside of track and field. So that would have been nice to have. And I think as a high school kid, building those relationships with them is special just outside of track alone.
You know, you deal with crybabies. You deal with the ones that need some screaming.
Yeah.
You
ones that have 876 questions per hour.
The ones you don't have to say a single thing to. Those are the best.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I will say this. I know this episode is about new coaches, but veteran coaches, use your new coaches when you can. Because I know, for example, there are times when you keep saying the same thing over and over and over to an athlete, and they're like, yeah, coach, and they do the complete opposite. If you just sometimes just spread that message to that new coach and say, hey, why don't you let so-and-so know that maybe they should be doing this? Sometimes just getting that same message from a different voice helps everybody. It helps you because you finally got through to that athlete, even though you might not have done it directly. But it also helps that coach because it's like, hey, coach, coach told me so-and-so, and you're thinking about, hell, I've been telling you this for like 2 years, but hey, if she got you to say it or he got you to say do it, so what? The end game is what's important. It got done. So, you know, I would say veteran coaches, you know, use the new coaches to your advantage to, you know, to assist you in those areas, because sometimes they may be in the same page as you, but they can – same page, get it? They might be on the same page as you, but they can voice the same thing in a different way that may relate to the athlete. You might be 48 and 52 and, you know, old school, where you have a 23-year-old coach or 25-year-old coach that listens to Migos still, that can relate to these athletes and say things in a way they can understand.
Who?
Migos.
Who?
And the kitchen wrist twists up like a stir fry. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like younger and new coaches can help bridge that gap when you had that 50-year-old coach who's like, we're going to do it my way or the highway. Can't be like that all the time. So, yeah. Anything else y'all want to add to that?
No.
Because I do have something I want to add that's kind of not on topic.
All right, what's up?
Did anybody see day four of the IAAF Indoor World Championships?
I was watching the back of my eyelids.
I did not see it.
Okay. Well, I cannot provide a full recap of the event. However, the part that I did see, the men's 4x400 meter relay, the meet record was the United States. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The world record was the United States. The world leader for this season was USC, college track team. Going into the meet, those were the times, those were the standards, those were the goals that people had in front of them. So as the 4x4 starts, the U.S. men are doing what the U.S. men do. They are kicking butt and taking names. Each leg, they are killing it and killing it. And wait a minute. The lead is getting a little bit closer, shorter, smaller. On the anchor leg, the U.S. is in the lead until the last 25 meters when none other than Poland comes by, passes them on the back, on the straightaway, crosses the finish line, not only beating the U.S., not only beating the meet record, not only becoming the world leader, but becoming the indoor 4x4 world record holders in 301.77. Poland.
It's those special European
enhancements,
supplements.
Yeah,
I usually call them Mexican supplements, but they probably don't get it from Mexico.
Yeah, they probably get it from Russia. But you didn't hear that from me.
Yeah,
but
yeah, shots fired.
Yeah, but yes, Poland now is the world indoor record holders in the 4x400 meter relay. I just wanted to throw that out there. The U.S. got passed again. What are we gonna do? I don't know.
It's indoor.
Yeah, it's indoor. Outdoor, we better be ready.
Yeah.
Well, there's no world championships this season anyways.
Yeah, we don't have world championships until next year.
Yeah.
So U.S. can just sit on that one for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Or next year.
Yeah.
Next year for indoor. Well, no, I don't think there is one for indoor next year.
Are they on even years for indoor championships?
I think so.
Okay.
But what year are we in? Okay.
2018.
Yeah, this is even, isn't it?
Yeah, because world championships are usually odd years.
Actually, why don't you quickly talk about your weekend?
My weekend?
Yeah, and how it is to be a coach and athlete going to an out-of-town track meets in the Northeast.
Well, I will say this. My weekend consisted of being a chaperone for the Section 5 team for the New York State indoor championships, and going into the trip, usually I'll just be honest, when I go to states and nationals, I'm there for my athlete first, but after that I'm a fan of all the other athletes that are representing where our area we're from, you know, us being Section 5. When we're going to nationals, I'm just looking to see what all the other kids are running, what all the other kids are jumping. I come into fan mode because I'm like, these are the future stars of tomorrow. And in the case of people like Sydney McLaughlin, the future stars of next week. So I'm hyped because I know on our bus, en route to this meet, we have kids that are ranked in the top five in the state in multiple events. We also Ferdy talked about in our last episode, live in the Northeast where it could be 66 last week, and then the day before you go to states, it's a blizzard on March 1st, which is what happened. So we had a blizzard. We're supposed to leave Friday morning to go to Staten Island from upstate New York at 8:30 in the morning. And the usual plan is we leave at 8:30. We get there, you know, in the afternoon. We go straight to the track. The kids get like about an hour and a half, 2 hours of practice, get used to the new facility, go to the hotel, eat. Then they get some rest. They get a full night's sleep. They come and they try to do their best and take home as many medals as possible. So with the storm, 8:30 became 11 o'clock. We're going to move the bus back to 11 o'clock because we want to avoid the storm. Because the storm hit us, wasn't really that bad, but the storm was going in the direction that we were traveling in. So then I get out, and actually I take that back. I woke up, and I look at my phone, and I got all kinds of alerts and text messages and everything. School's canceled. They've now pushed it back to 1 o'clock. So we were originally leaving at 8:30, then they moved to 11 o'clock a.m. Now we're leaving at 1 p.m. So I'm like, okay, tell my daughter she doesn't have school, go back to sleep. I got to get up, you know, make sure that I have the driveway shoveled so that I can get out and get there in time. So I go out there and I shovel the driveway, come back in. All right, time to take my shower. I'm getting ready to go. Check my alerts, check my text messages, my missed calls. Now we're not even leaving on Friday. We're leaving at 5 a.m. on Saturday, the day of the meet, to Staten Island from upstate New York, which is about a 6.5 hour trip. So, that being said, if we're leaving at 5 a.m., we got to get there at about 4:30, which means kids have to get up at like 3:30, sometimes 2:30, depending on where they're coming from. In the morning. Remember, the meet is this day. The meet is Saturday. They're getting up at 2:30 in the morning on Saturday to get on the bus and take a 6.5 hour trip, right? So we get on the bus, 5 o'clock. We leave about 5:05. The whole plan about stopping halfway for lunch is out of the window because the meets will start at like 11:45 for field events, 12 o'clock for track events. So we're just going straight there. We're stopping halfway to switch drivers, and then we're just going to continue on. So it was like a 15-minute stop.
What time did you get there?
We left at 5 a.m. We got to the track meet at about 4 p.m. We were on the bus for 11 hours, pretty much.
That's insane.
That being said, they did push the meet back to about 1:30, but that also being said, we had athletes miss the 55-meter dash, the 55 hurdles, shot put, weight throw, high jump, triple jump, 4x4, 2 mile, and we had athletes ranked in the top 5 in the state in triple jump, hurdles, 55. It was terrible. And not only that, the athletes that did get to compete, some of them got to compete in some of their events. Some of them didn't get to compete in any of their individual events, maybe a relay. Some of them didn't get to compete at all. They sat on the bus for 11 hours just to go watch everybody else compete. Some of them were seniors. So, I mean, it was just that part of it, you just feel terrible because the athletes didn't do anything wrong. They were where they were supposed to be at the time they were supposed to be. They didn't, you know, leave late because they left late. They left late because that's when they were told the bus was leaving. You know, it was completely out of their control. We're driving down. The highway's closed. We had to get off and go another route. This road is blocked and closed. We had to go another route. We get blocked on that route. We have to turn around and go back. Okay, now this highway is opened up. There's trees in there. That's not the kids' fault. But we get there at 4 o'clock. They miss half their events. In spite of all that, we did still come away with a good number of state champions and medalists. So my words to them was, I know you're upset. I know you have a right to be upset. Be upset. But at the same time, in spite of everything that you guys had to go through, to still come away, you know, getting medals, to still come away, some of you as state champions, just think about what could have happened had you had the same preparation that everybody else had. And they also seemed like they were really motivated for outdoor as well. So in even though we had all this negative, you know, these negative experiences with the trip going down, it did kind of show that those kids that were on our Section 5 team did have a lot of character, had a lot of resilience, and they're motivated for outdoor. Nobody was, like, mad and cursing and everything like that and throwing stuff they couldn't because they couldn't compete. It just says, see, and it, all right, wait till outdoor. We gonna show them what's up in outdoor. And that was something that I was really proud about. You know, so shout out to everybody that was on the state team, whether you competed or not, just for being there and going through it and holding your heads high, you know, throughout all of that. It was crazy, but, you know, in the end, a lot of it worked out. So that was my weekend. And, yeah, after the meet that ended at 8:30, we got in the bus and turned right back around and came home. So we had a day trip to Staten Island.
How long did it take you to get back?
We got back fairly quickly. It was pretty much a straight shot because everything was pretty much open by that point. So we left around 9:30, got back about 4:30 because we had to switch drivers again. I was home by 5 o'clock. So I had about a 25-hour day of track and field as a coach and quote-unquote chaperone, because the chaperone thing kind of went out the window when we didn't have the hotel. So, yeah, good times. But we got a second place in the state in long jump, though, so it was all worth it. Word. That wasn't even their best event, so it's all good. Holla at your boy and your girl and your other boy on the other seat.
And then on the outside news, Canelo Alvarez got popped for a performance-enhancing drug. Like I was talking about those Mexican supplements, cut it out. All right, I'm done.
Were those shots fired?
I'm just saying.
Okay, it happens. Yeah, anybody have anything else they'd like to add to this episode of Track Talk?
Paige?
Thank you for allowing me to be here today.
You're invited anytime.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're a friend of this show now, so you're not being interviewed anymore. Now anytime you want to come talk on the topic, come on through.
All right, great.
You're in the in crowd. All right.
Feels good to be in.
There you go. If y'all want to holler at us on the IG or the Twitter, it's at Track Talk With Us. We spell everything properly, so at Track Talk With Us. The at symbol, Track Talk With Us. That's IG. That's also Twitter. You can email us at 585tracktalk@gmail.com. Ferdy, where you at on IG and Twitter?
He is Ferdy. That's HEISFERDY.
Cool.
You're just going to find some pictures of a goddang gentleman.
My IG is at Coach Harris TF. The TF is for track and field, so that's at Coach Harris TF. On Twitter, I'm at The Real DJ Rock, at The Real DJ ROC, all one word. Check us out on iTunes, SoundCloud, pretty soon Google Music, YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening on YouTube, hit the subscribe button right below. There's no video, so I'm pointing right now. You can't see it, but I'm pointing at the subscribe button underneath. So click that, subscribe, tell a friend. You'll get alerts anytime we post another episode, and do that. Yeah. And I think that Paige, CH, Ferdy, Track Talk, out.
Deuce.
Peace.